What's the 411? You tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield, and joining me here at the roundtable, I welcome all students from Sale High School, Jeremiah Garcia. Jeremiah is in the 10th grade. His interests include illusions, magic, pickpocketing, and acting.
Hi, thank you.
Alexa Rozier, she has been here before. It's so nice. She's doing it twice. We're always welcome and glad to have you back. She's in 11th grade, as I said, and she likes Dexter. She likes singing, and she likes swinging off trees.
Hello.
Zoe Hoon. Zoe is an 11th grader. She likes Star Trek, pina coladas, and getting caught in the rain.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. Welcome all of you to 411 Teen. In the 1990s, most states joined a movement to crack down on juvenile crime, making it easier to punish teens as adults. Traditionally, juveniles in the juvenile system had an emphasis on treatment and education. Under the adult system, the emphasis was more on punishment than rehabilitation. Research has indicated that 90% of teen offenders do not become criminals. There's a new trend now. We're looking at not placing juveniles in the adult system. So that's where we're at, and that's what we're going to talk about. What are your feelings when I say juvenile crime? What comes to mind? What are your feelings? And I'll just go around the table. I'm looking at you, Zoe, so I'll go with you.
Whenever you say juvenile crime, I tend to think of, you know, just like regular crimes just committed by people who are, you know, not legally adults yet.
And when you say regular crime, what's that?
You know, anything from robbery to just all over the criminal scale.
Okay. All right. Alexa.
My views are the same as Zoe's. When you say juvenile crime, I'm thinking about like all the normal crimes that adults commit, just like done by people who are under 18.
Okay. You in the same spot, or where are you?
Same boat. As juvenile, have not yet reached adulthood, so.
Okay. So they're committing the same kinds of things. It's just the difference is the age.
Yes.
That what you're saying? Okay. Now, when we look at this crime, we're saying that the only difference is age. Do you think there are any circumstances or are there any particular types of crimes that should be considered an exception?
In my opinion, no.
That's what we want.
A crime is just a crime, no matter who does it or, like, what the situation is. Because, like, I guess if you're low on money or something like that, stealing from somewhere or from someone doesn't really, it's not a way to get money. If that's, like, the particular crime or any other crime, like, you can't really justify it.
Okay, so you're saying that there are no circumstances that you think, that's fine,
really.
I just want to make sure. You're just saying there are no circumstances. Now, what about you, Zoe? Do you think there are any situations that we should take into consideration, or is it all the same?
It's really hard for me to answer that because sometimes I feel like we should take in situations because if I was in that sort of situation, I would want people to, you know, wonder about, you know, what's happening and why I did that. But then at the same time, sometimes I look at crimes that people commit and I think that there should be no consideration at all. And so it's really hard to adopt, like, one particular stance on that.
Okay. We'll come back to that. What about you, Jeremiah?
Well, there's different types of crimes. It's, as you were saying, it's you got manslaughter and you have simply maybe stealing money from somebody. Killing somebody and maybe stealing $10 or $20 of petty theft is definitely not the same thing. It could depend, considering maybe mentally unstable and you killed somebody, and or you just did it because you hated them. It just depends on the circumstances. It's not justified, but it does depend.
Okay, let's take justified out, because what I'm not really talking about is the crime justified at all. What I want to know is, whatever the crime is the person commits, are there circumstances or situations that we should consider when looking at this crime that would make it maybe an exception? For example, let's say someone stole $20, okay? You have somebody who steals $20 from another person. Here you have someone who's 25 who does it, and then you have someone who's 12 who does it. Are they the same? Okay, that's what I was asking. That's what, you know, what I'm asking you are there circumstances, are there situations that we should consider? And you say no. When you're saying no, Jeremiah, what are you thinking about? What makes the difference?
For a 24-year-old, they would obviously be more mentally mature and they would know what they're doing specifically. Mm-hmm. As the 12-year-old, he might just want to, depending on the reason, but he, you know, might want it for a video game, candy, whatever, but he's not yet learned maybe right from wrong.
Okay.
I disagree.
Okay, good.
Because in my opinion, I feel like if you're 12, you're like in double digits by now. You're almost a teenager. By 12 years old, you should be able to tell, you know, this is what I should do and this is what I shouldn't do. Like, I understand that they're a lot younger than the 25-year-old, but, like, they're not exactly, like, they're not stupid or, I guess, ignorant, I should say, to what they should be doing and what they shouldn't be.
Okay. All right. We'll come back to that. What about you, Zoe?
I think that it's still a crime, no matter how old you are. But at the same time, no matter how old you are, I don't see $25, like, making it to a court. But I also do think that it doesn't matter about age. Like, a crime is a crime is a crime.
Okay.
And I do think that in terms of sentencing, situations and, like, age can be taken into consideration. But it's still, you know, it deserves to be charged as a crime.
Okay. So no matter what, it's a crime. But what about what role does age play in the sentencing then? What role should it play? I mean, where do you see it? Is age significant when you start looking at, you know, the crime that has been committed and the sentence you may get for it?
If you're under 18, you should be sentenced as a juvenile, and if you're above 18, then as an adult. I don't think that there should be any, like, differences. Like, you shouldn't say, oh, this 16-year-old, technically they knew what they were doing, so they should be tried as an adult. I think under 18.
Cut and dry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What about the rest of you? What do you think? You look like your wheels are spinning in there. Well,
there's the reason that we do have the juvenile system. It's not just there. So it would be wise to say, oh, no, you know, if you're under 18 to be charged as an adult, because that's the reason why we have the juvenile system. So I completely agree with Zoe.
Okay.
I agree with both of them. I think that it should be like, yeah, 18 and up is in this category, and then under 18 is in another category. I don't think there should be any, like, subcategories in between those two.
Okay, sections. What about the kid that is 7 years old, and this has happened, who takes a gun to school, as opposed to the kid who is 15 years old who takes a gun to school? Should they both be dealt with the same way?
We would have to know a backstory. We can't just say what the 15-year-old, 7-year-old, you know, what they were doing. So obviously the circumstances would be a huge deal. And I believe that they would be tried differently because a 7-year-old is a lot younger than a 15-year-old. And we don't even know, you know, what he's considering what he's been through. You know, maybe if he has something wrong with him, it would all depend.
And yeah, okay. What's your feeling about that, Alex?
I feel like it's different in a way.
Okay. In what way?
I agree that it's like you have to know the backstory. I agree with that. Does the 7-year-old in this situation, did they bring the gun to school because they found it and they're like, hey, I want to bring this to school with me? Or were they like, hey, I want to take this to school, I know what it is, and I want to use it? Depending on the reason for these two separate kids bringing these guns to school, that should be the main effect on what happens to them in court.
Okay, so the reasons, okay. What about you, Zoe?
I say yes, they should be dealt with the same way. They should both be charged for whatever crime they committed.
Okay.
And then it's in court where all the reasons can come out and then the jury can decide what they think is best.
Okay. So you think they both should be charged no matter what, the 7-year-old and the 14-year-old?
Mm-hmm.
You don't see any difference in them?
I do see a difference in terms of age, but at the same time, I have to sort of...
What I'm trying to get to, and you know, wherever you sit is fine. What I'm trying to find out is, you know, here we have this 7-year-old, and then we've got a 14-year-old. There's got to be regardless of the backstory, regardless of, you know, what brought them in here. You got a 17-year-old and a 14-year-old. Are they equal? I'm not talking about whatever they're charged with. I'm talking about how you deal with it.
You'd have to deal with them the same way. Because the minute you start making allowances for, like, certain people, then people will try to, like, expand that category. They'll start saying, oh, well, this is kind of like that. We should include this, too. And then, you know, suddenly people are getting away with crimes, no matter what age.
Okay. All right. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're having an interesting discussion. We're looking at juvenile crime. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, where you get the 411 on today's life issues and events. What role does environment or milieu play when it comes to sentencing and rehabilitation? And when I say milieu, let's say you have a kid who saw his father, and this is a real situation, saw his father shoot and kill his mother at the dining room table on Thanksgiving, okay? Or you have a teen who's had to endure chronic mental illness or physical illness of a parent. They've grown up with this. Or a child who's mentally compromised. And see, we haven't even touched on any of these. Does that influence, you know, the sentencing or the rehab? Because what I'm trying to find out is, are there any exceptions?
I would have to say yes. I would have to say that if somebody is mentally unstable, they would have to have an exception. But I feel like nowadays that's so cliche because of every... almost national murder you hear, it's always, oh, they've been mentally unstable. You know, a lot of charges that have been dropped against them or can't be pushed against them because they are mentally ill. But it has played a significant role in it.
Yeah, and even though you feel that way, I mean, if they claim that in court, it's not like you can just go in court and say that.
Of course. They've
got to be able to validate that, you know, and show. So even when people claim it, there's got to be some support for that. They've got to be evaluated. Okay, what about you, Zoe?
I think that if they are proven to be, you know, mentally compromised, then their sentencing should reflect that and that they should be given the opportunity to get the proper psychiatric help.
Okay. But back to my original question, we just kind of got off in looking at mentally compromised. What about the environment? What about what influence do you think the environment has on one's behavior, one's moral compass, so to speak? What role does that environment or milieu play? Yes.
I think a child's or even an adult's environment plays maybe one of the largest parts in how they respond to things and how they deal with things, because a kid that grows up in a house that's for the most part happy or in a house where they're encouraged all the time to do nice things, they grow up to be the type of person who responds to things in a way that is...
They may grow up.
They may grow up to respond to things in a way that is, I guess, socially accepted. And a kid that grows up in a place that's, like, abusive or just really, really stressful is going to grow up and probably respond to things in a completely different way than the kid who was in this house full of encouragement and happiness.
So... After you said all that, you're saying that environment
is the largest.
Is a factor.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that, Jeremiah?
Oh, 100% completely, yes.
Okay. Now, once we've established this, what difference should be made if they come from a different environment? Do you think we should make a difference when it comes to sentencing or rehabilitation or, you know, how we deal with them? If we have this, they both do the same crime, okay? But one came from an impoverished environment, in a milieu that was, you know, very, very limited, okay? They've received very little encouragement. You know, they were kind of raising themselves compared to the milieu that, or the environment, that home environment that gave them everything.
I would say that they're equal. Change the circumstances real quick. If you have a high businessman who was, to say, murder somebody, mm-hmm. and then you would have a very poor person in the slums who murdered somebody, they're both murders. They should both get the same amount of time.
Okay, and that's a good point. Any other comments? Okay. Now think about, what was this? It just happened this year. The guy, I think, was in California. He was drunk. Young guy, 16, something like that. He was drunk and driving and killed. And you know what his defense was?
Affluenza.
Affluenza. Okay. And do you know about this? I'll elaborate a little bit. He was drunk. He ended up killing 4 people, wasn't it? About 4 people. And the defense was that he had affluenza. He was very affluent. That was serious, right? Mm-hmm. He was from a very, very affluent family. And the reason that he engaged in this behavior is because his parents never really had to pay the piper. His parents, they were very affluent, and so they got him out of everything, and he never was held accountable. This was their defense, and he walked on this. People should see your face. I mean, no, it's real. Am I telling?
Yeah.
Okay. So here we have an environment. Yes, ma'am. I'd like to hear your response to this.
I'm just completely in awe of this. Yeah. I hadn't this even heard about this.
But, it was all over.
Oh, goodness man. Gracious.
No, but, you didn't hear about it?
I heard a little bit of it, but I wasn't. I never kept up with it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's it.
That's how it ended.
Nutshell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And he killed like 4, and the excuse was that he had affluenza.
I think that's crazy because my parents don't totally not hold me accountable for anything that I do, but I live in the type of household where my parents are like, okay, you did this bad thing. Do you understand why you did it? Mm-hmm. Okay, we're not going to punish you. We're just going to make sure that you understand what was wrong and what was right. And I'm not about to go out and, like, get in my car drunk or anything else and then just go run over four people and then go to court and say, Appaloosa is my reason for doing this.
You may not, but it has happened.
Yeah,
and that's the point.
It's just, that's just so crazy to me. That's a legitimate excuse for something.
Yeah, it was. Zoe, what's your take on this?
We talked about this in my psychology class, actually. And I remember, like, everybody was outraged when we had heard about this. And my teacher today brought up some more cases of, you know, celebrities who commit crimes and then can get away with them, you know, and not because they claim, like, affluenza, but because they're celebrities and because they have money. And that just really just disgusts me, that if you have money or you have, you know, the status to back yourself up, mm-hmm. it does not matter what you do, you can get away with it. But if that kid had been anybody else, right. if he had been, you know, like you or me or anybody else in this room or anybody else in this city... He would be serving time for that.
What do you think about it, Jeremiah?
Well, it's very true. 100%. It really is. A lot of people say, you know, we are equal, but if you have a lot of money, you can do a lot of different things that other people would probably never even get the taste to do.
Okay. What do you think then now, as we talk about all these different variables that play into it, when we think about rehabilitating juveniles, what are the keys? What should be done? Where do we go? And I don't mean literally where do we go, but what do we do? What's the position that you think people should take? Because we're talking about trying to change some behaviors. And the reason I keep adding, I always add age to it. I'll just go on and tell you. Is at 7, they don't have the understanding or the comprehension as even a 14-year-old. So that's why I kept asking you about that. Because there's, in many ways, there's no comparison. Yeah, they both may have killed somebody or they both may have hung the cat, whatever. But a 7-year-old and a 14-year-old, there should be cognitively some major differences between the two of them, okay? So that's why I'm asking you about age and what role age plays. I'm asking about the keys. How do we rehabilitate? What do you think would be some of the key things that those in control would need to do as far as rehabilitation is concerned?
I think that one of the things that needs to be remembered that we were talking about earlier, actually, mm-hmm. is environment. And a lot of kids who commit crimes come from pretty bad environments. And so you have to be careful not to just release them right back into that and give them the opportunity to offend again. And so I don't want to say, like, hold on to them until, you know they can't, like, go back there. But, like...
But if that's their real world, you know, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but if that's their real world, what do you do? Where do you go?
I think a way to help kids who are in environments that are not ideal is to, before you release them back into this particular environment, you could possibly, if it's possible, give them the tools to learn how to deal with that environment in a way that isn't going to cause them to end up in court. Teach them, like, strategies for dealing with their feelings or whatever it is that's causing them to want to commit whatever crime they are doing.
Okay, and what environment do we teach them? Do we take them out of the home? Do we put them in a residential? Do they stay in their home and then maybe go to a special class? Do they go to a special school? I'm just, you know, again, wanting you to kind of give me some ideas that you think, you know, I mean, you all are the juveniles that you think would be effective in turning this kid around.
You don't want to pressure them. You don't want to completely get all up in their life. Depending on the crime they committed, I believe some crimes would need to take the extra step to take them out of their house, put them in another facility, and then work with them. But some, if it's not as horrendous, you would be able to put them in classes, teach them, but you wouldn't want to do so much that they would get fed up with it, you know, push you away even more.
Okay. Should our focus, our direction be punishment or rehabilitation?
It's such a broad...
I can't believe you
It's such a broad decision, because it's like 50-50 heads or tails. It really all depends. It's difficult to say, because you wouldn't know. You would have to, you know, you'd have to say what they did in order to say.
Okay. Granted, given whatever it is they did, do we punish them for doing it, or do we try to rehabilitate them? Is there a difference?
I feel like it'd be...
Go right ahead.
I feel like it'd be more effective if you attempted to rehabilitate them, because, you know, there are some parents who their kids do something and they go straight to punishment. They're like, go sit in the corner, or I'm going to spank you or whatever, and that doesn't really teach the kid not to do something.
Mm-hmm. All it does is teach them to be aggressive.
Yeah, and so it's like, if you try to rehabilitate them, they may respond more, and they may actually learn something.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like rehabilitation is more important than punishment.
Okay, does that matter? Does it change with age? And think about it. Come back, because I want to hear what you think about punishment versus rehabilitation, Zoe.
Punishment versus rehabilitation. I think that it should definitely be more towards rehabilitation, because chances are that these kids, like, unless they got like a life sentence, then they're going to be, you know, coming back out on the streets eventually, and they need to be able to, you know, recognize patterns of behavior when they're about to, you know, put themselves into a situation where they will have opportunity to commit more crimes. They need to be able to find ways to remove themselves from those situations, and they need to, you know, be integrated back into society in the best way possible.
Is there any benefit from punishment?
I think, in my opinion, punishment is, in some cases, rehabilitation. It can be.
Okay.
There are a lot of benefits for it.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't really name a few off my head, but there are some.
Okay.
I think punishment, in some situations, I guess it could be beneficial, but I think for the most part, let's say you stick some kid in jail. You're like, hey, you're going to be here for the next, I don't know, 10 months. And I feel like for some kids, yeah, that might scare them into wanting to do correctly, but I mean, at some point in their life, they're going to stop being afraid. And if fear is the only thing that you have in order to get a kid to do things that are socially acceptable, then you're going to, like, eventually you're going to fail. So.
Okay. All right. Do you feel like, I guess I want to say there's any, but is there any benefit to one or the other? I mean, what do you think is best? I mean, that I'm just, again, trying to get your take on it.
My opinion would be complete punishment, I think.
I didn't hear you.
My opinion would be punishment.
Your opinion would be punishment. Okay.
I think you need to find, like, a middle ground between the two. Find a way to mix rehabilitation and with punishment, and that would be pretty successful.
Punishment, that really only benefits the people on the outside. Like, the people who are on the receiving end of the punishment, you know, they're not really benefited at all. And rehabilitation, in its purest form and, you know, its most effective form, it could potentially benefit everyone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Are there any crimes that you think juveniles should be treated the same way as adults? Okay? And what I'm thinking, let's look at one. I won't even throw you out there. Let's say murder. Okay? Murder is murder, and I think we were talking about this at the very beginning. It's one of those offenses that say, a lot of conservatives say, juveniles should be treated the same way as adults. You've taken someone's life. What do you think?
I think it depends on what happened. I'm not really sure, like, what constitutes as first-degree murder or second-degree or third-degree, but, like, if it's accidental, like, say, I saw this on a TV show. I don't think it actually happened, but a person, while, like, really young, accidentally pushed her other sibling down the stairs too hard, and she fell and hit her head and then died. So, I mean, that wasn't on purpose. There wasn't any malicious intent. And so it really just depends on what's happened before you're... Okay, this person murdered these two people out of anger, and then this kid accidentally pushed her sister down the stairs too hard, and then she hit her head. Like, you
and
can't...
Both, the end result is the same.
Yeah, it's
we
both...
We have two individuals who are dead.
Yeah, they both end in death, but the situations are extremely different. So I don't think you can punish them the same way or treat them the exact same way.
Okay. We're going to take a brief break. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and we are looking at juvenile crime. I have three dynamic young folks here kind of looking at where we should be and what we should do as far as juvenile crime is concerned. Welcome to the Ethicist's Corner. Panelists weigh in on the rights and wrongs of daily life. Today's dilemma. Does the Postal Service owe you a refund for a 3-minute late delivery? It was supposed to be there at 10 o'clock. You know how you have a special, it was supposed to be there at 10 o'clock, and if they don't get it there within that time frame, then you get a refund. And it gets there at 10:03. What do you think?
I don't think
no.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't think the post office owes you anything. I mean,
well, now listen now. Think about what I'm saying. You've sent this package, this letter, and you paid extra money to have it delivered at a particular time. The post office tells you, okay, Jeremiah, we'll deliver this package. It will be there tomorrow at 10 o'clock. You call your friend to find out, did you get what I sent you? And they said, yeah, well, when did you get it? 10:03, and then they're going to send you back something, an email telling you it was delivered. Do you think you should get your refund? Because it was supposed to be there at 10 o'clock.
If that's what you bought, if that's what you bought specifically that said,
right.
I'm paying this to get there at right. 10 o'clock, then you should get a refund because you didn't get what you purchased.
Okay.
Then you should get your refund. But if they just said, oh, it'll be there around 10, then...
No.
If it's specifically at 10, and you get there at 10:03.
You paid extra, okay? You do have these options. This is not something I'm just making up, okay? You have an option. If I want to send somebody something, they need to get it. You have an option to pay a certain amount of money, extra money, which will guarantee that it arrives at a specific time or before that specific time. It was supposed to be there at 10 o'clock. It got there at 10:03.
If you want to go through all the trouble to get your money back, then go for it because you didn't get what you bought.
Because usually, like, when you pay for this, I'm coming to you, Alexa. But usually when you pay for this, it might be $40. It might be $40 that you paid so that you could get this there. And it's supposed to be there by 10. Of course, it gets there at 10:03. Alexa.
I don't feel like the post office owes you, like, a refund, because it's, like, there's so many variables that could, like, affect what time they get there. Like, say...
But, wait a minute. Let's not go off on that.
Okay.
You have paid for it to get there Yes, you've paid extra.
Yes.
For it to get there at 10 o'clock. It gets there at 10:03. I'm asking you, do you think you get a refund?
Well, one question then. Are we assuming that this was, like, brought in a truck, right? Like, UPS delivered it, or?
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter? Well, I'm just saying, because
you paid for it to be there at 10 o'clock.
Should they throw it at your door at 10 o'clock? Because I'm just saying, like say that they're in a car. Like, this is being delivered by car. And they, like, a cop pulls someone over right in front of the truck that has your package in it.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. What about you, Zoe?
I'd let 3 minutes go. Like,
That's the whole point. Like, that's what we're trying to say.
Like, unless, like, for some, like, I don't know what I'm getting delivered that needs to be at, like, exactly at 10 o'clock. Unless it's a bomb, I think chances are I'll be all right with 3 minutes late.
Well, it could be an application. It could be something that you have to have there at a certain time, application or something, and then it gets there late. You're applying for a grant. I mean, there are things that have time limits. So, you know, and you're applying for this, and the time limit is 10 o'clock or 6 o'clock, and it gets there at 6:03. I've known people who have had things submitted, got there late, 3 minutes late, 5 minutes late, and it wasn't accepted.
If that was my situation, I would have told them to have it there earlier. So even if they were late, I'd still have a good amount of time.
You didn't get what you paid for, so you should get your refund.
I guess okay. If you look at it like that, then yeah, you should get your refund if you paid for it.
And it's just kind of a fun question. Yeah. But they've paid for it, okay? Yeah. And they didn't get what they paid for, just like what you said, Jeremiah.
Yeah. Of course.
Okay. So if they feel entitled, they should get it.
Okay. Well, that's it for today's Ethicist Corner. I appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
What's the 411? You're tuned into 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me are students from SAIL. Joining me here at the roundtable again is Jeremiah Garcia, Alexa Rosia, and Zoe Hume. We've been looking at juvenile crime, and we know now the trend is not to put juveniles in adult facilities alongside violent, vicious criminals. How do you feel about that? What do you think? What impact do you think this has had on juveniles, putting them in facilities with adults? I mean, if they do the same crime, you know, because if we go from what you were saying at the beginning, if they do the same crime, well, why not?
That completely makes you think of that TV show, what, Beyond Scare Straight? That's what immediately brings to my head.
It's so scary.
I feel like everything that I feel that we're being taught is completely scare tactics. And it goes to a point where those are just going to break off and you're just not going to be scared anymore. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have an effect if you put, you know, a juvenile into a system with adults. I don't think it should be like that, because you're not going to put a sixth grader into, you know, a 12th grade class. They need to, you know, mature up and still be with people of their own age, or close to that at least.
Okay.
Jails, or prisons, I guess, sometimes can be extremely violent, or at least you hear about it, and it's like, this person got beat up in jail, this person had this happen to them while in prison or jail.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if you're sticking a kid, no matter how old they are, even if they're like 17, I guess they're pretty close to being adults, but they're still kids for the most part. And if you're lumping them in with all of these adults who are also criminals, I'm sorry, if you're lumping them in with all these adults who are also criminals, it's like, I don't know, you're just opening it up for them to be treated, I guess, like, you know, fresh meat, like when you get into high school, you're like you're like the fish that everyone wants to catch and, like, mm-hmm. you know, kill or whatever.
Right.
Jesus.
I couldn't think of that.
That's not what high school was like for me.
Me neither, but I just mean, you know.
Okay. The juvenile justice system was created over 103 years ago in belief that young people are less responsible for their actions and more open to rehabilitation. Do you think that society owes juveniles the opportunity to rehabilitate before throwing away the key? Because if we put them in this prison system, it's sort of like throwing away the key.
Yes, I do think that they should have a chance at rehabilitation, but I also think that there's got to be a point where there's no more chances.
Mm-hmm.
I say one chance.
Okay, at what point you say one chance?
Because if you give people an opportunity to continually take advantage of you and the system, they will take that opportunity. And I think that happens too much as it is.
Okay.
I think that I agree with Zoe. I feel like once a kid becomes like a repeat offender, you stop giving them chances mm-hmm. to rehabilitate themselves because it's like they obviously didn't learn the first time. And if you happen to give them a second chance and they still don't learn that time, obviously if they do it again, they don't. There's nowhere in their future where they see themselves following the rules or doing what they should be doing.
Didn't
I? No, it's my turn.
yes?
Well, I agree with Alexa. After, you know, one time, okay, slap on the wrist, you know, second mm-hmm. time, butt whooping, third time, you know, why'd you do it again? You know, you should know by now, and that's when you really, you know, mm-hmm. give them the full punishment.
One thing we haven't talked about is education. And what is the position of education? Because we're still talking about young folks who haven't completed their education. So whether they're incarcerated or not, what role should education play?
I think kids who are incarcerated should still be allowed to further their education if they're interested in it. I don't think it should be forced because, you know, if they don't feel like doing it, then they shouldn't have to, I guess. But, I'm sorry. It's like, I don't know, when adults are in jail or prison, they're mm-hmm. allowed to get their college degrees, I think. Yeah, they're allowed
to. Yeah, they're trying to change that many places.
Oh,
they
okay.
Well, yeah, but no, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, they're allowed to like further their education mm-hmm. as much as possible. So if a child wants to do it, if they're interested, they should be allowed to continue their high school education or whatever it is that they're doing.
Okay. We found that adolescent girls are becoming the fastest growing segment of young offenders. According to the Justice by Gender report, girls are now more often detained for less serious offenses than boys, and they're also more likely to be cited for contempt of court. Why do you believe we're seeing this increase in female crime? What's going on? What's your take on that?
That's always been an issue, male and female. You said it's the female crime rate is rising?
Well, they found that it has been rising and that, you know, we're seeing a lot more females in the juvenile justice system than we had in the past.
I couldn't say specifically why they would be. I really couldn't put my finger on anything that would really cause that to, you know, uproar.
Okay. How about you ladies? Do you have any ideas that might be causing females?
I don't think there's, like, any one, like, reason that can
no,
be.
No, I'm not asking for one. Well, just, you know, do you have any insights as to why we may see more?
I don't know. I know, like, scientifically, girls, like, feel more passionately than guys do about things. Like, I know that's a thing. Like,
mm-hmm.
maybe that's it.
That's a good point.
So I feel like that's like the only one you could think of is that they're probably, girls just feel more passionately about things than guys do.
Okay.
The only thing that I can really think of is that maybe there's more reports of it now rather than like in the past. And maybe it's just been the same and mm-hmm. now people are starting to notice.
Yeah, we're just paying more attention to it. And that, I'm sure it's all of the above. You know, it's a combination of things, but I just wanted to get your take on it. Once you heard if females are increasing, then what might be the cause of it? Do you think that juvenile offenders have a diminished, culpability for their crimes? And what I'm thinking here, and we've kind of touched on this before, is just their cognitive, their maturity level, you know, their cognitive ability. If you're juvenile, you certainly are not mature. We know the brain is not mature. We know that you're a lot more impulsive. You don't think before you act. So do you think that given if you're a juvenile, if you're an adolescent, do you think that should be taken into consideration? Do they have a diminished culpability for crime?
Depending on the crime. I feel like we haven't already discussed this, or have we gotten to something similar to this before?
We didn't get into it. We kind of scratched the surface.
Did we?
Mm-hmm.
What was the...
Well, I'm just saying, do you think because they're adolescents, because they're juveniles, they have not matured, that plays a role in their committing crimes? Because they are impulsive. Okay, because they don't think things through, and because their brain is not fully developed.
It should. I believe the brain doesn't stop developing until the age of 21, so that does mm-hmm. play a good role in that. Mm-hmm. And it should, in court, be brought up as one of the facts of it.
Okay, all right.
I think that if the brain doesn't stop developing until you're, 21, how come the age
or
range...
Or older. Go on.
Yeah, how come we don't take that into consideration? How come 21-year-olds are considered, not juveniles, but, how come people don't bring that up for 21-year-olds if their brains still aren't fully developed by then? Because, I don't know, I feel like you can't really say...
Well, that's not a moot issue. I mean, that's not moot. It's pretty well recognized that the brain of a 14-year-old or an 18-year-old is not fully developed.
Yeah.
Now, why they don't do it? I mean, I guess I turn that question around to you. Why don't they at 21?
I have no idea. I just feel like if you're going to bring in the fact that, people's brains aren't fully developed and so they're still impulsive or they just don't think about things before they do them, it's like, I feel like if a... someone over the age of 18, if their brain is also not fully developed and they're also impulsive, how come they aren't lumped into that group of people that, get a slap on the wrist because of their age?
But even if they aren't lumped into that group, what I'm asking is, do you think that that has an influence or an impact on their crime?
Probably. I mean, I feel like if you're 14, you really want a game. You're like, I want that game, so I'm going to go and, take this money from this person because I really, really want that game and my parents aren't getting it. Mm-hmm. So you're just, you're not really thinking about it. You're just thinking, oh, I really want this game. And then, I guess to contradict myself, if you're 21, you're like, I want this game, but I'm old enough to understand that I can't just take money and then go buy the game because that's not okay. So I guess, it is something that has to be brought into consideration because a 14-year-old is definitely more impulsive than a 21-year-old, even though they both have underdeveloped brains.
On you.
I think that you're just as responsible for what you did, and that's... I can't finish that sentence. But to Alexa about, they're 21, but they're not lumped in the juvenile category, you can drink and drive at 21. I think
you should be
charged as an adult.
You can do that at
16,
too.
But it's only legal. It's legal.
And, I mean, we're talking about legally.
Yeah.
I mean, because, there's no need of... you can do it at 10.
It's possible.
I mean, it's possible, right? But, we got to stay within the legal statutes, okay? And some of them don't make a lot of sense, okay? So, but now what you were saying is you...
Oh, the thing to Alexa was that, they can, if you can drink and you can drive, mm-hmm. then chances are if you're making those decisions, then even if your brain is not fully developed, you know for a fact what is right and wrong.
Okay. All right.
At least you should.
Well, I just want to say thank you. I mean, you know, it's been interesting to get your feelings and your thoughts on this. For my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.